Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, it's been a minute. We're still here. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're going to recap a bowl game tonight that's over a month old.
Yes, we are. We figured, yeah, you know, we wanted to make sure we waited until things kind of calm down, everyone moves on from college football, and then we bring it back, you know, because now is the time to be recapping these bowl games. It felt like it made sense from a content management standpoint. Isn't that right, Producer Scott?
Thumbs up. Beautiful. National championship was a week and a half ago. Joey, congratulations to your Georgia Bulldogs.
Gross. I won like $11 betting, yeah. Georgia money line in the national title game, so that was great.
I made $50 nice. Continuously live betting the quarter lines, so it was good.
Yeah, you saw that game going and away it did pretty early. You know, it's pretty easy to make some money on it.
I bet TCU plus 13.5, which was dumb. And then I just let it ride. I didn't cash out. I just let it go to zero. And then it was what was the final score? 65-7. So
I believe so. Yeah.
Great. Glad I did that. Stupid. The game is won at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. When did you turn the game off?
I had the game on the entire time. I stopped paying attention basically middle of the second quarter.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was ready to turn it off, and then I finally did turn it off after there was the interception that led to a really quick touchdown right before halftime. I think made it like 31-7, 38-7, something like that.
That's correct.
I was like, oh no, we're good. Turned it off. And I checked the score a couple more times in the second half. Kind of like a hate checking kind of thing. But no, I did not have the TV on after that.
Yeah, they scored like three times in 3.5 minutes or something like that right before halftime.
Yeah, and it was like, no, this is over. Anyways.
Yeah. No, I had on the background for second half just to say it was on. And it was like national championships, last college football game of the year. I understand why you turned it off early. I just was like, this is the last college football game of the year. I got to tough it out. And it was getting really, really hard when it was like 55-7 or whatever it was. I was like, man, do I really need to do this to myself?
Yeah. Yeah. I almost never will do this in the national title game. Cause like you said, I mean, last game of the year, but like that particular game, watching those particular teams and how bad that was going, I was like, I don't need this in my life right now. Like, we're good. But you know,
yeah.
Anyways, part of why I turned it off too was we were dealing with putting the toddler to bed, which is related to why this has taken so long to get recorded, by the way. Between a couple of different like personal ailments and just like parenting and some burnout at the end of the season. So we do apologize for the delay here. This was not ever like the intended timeline for doing this. It's just kind of the way that it worked out. But we are here now. We do have some news that we're going to cover here first, and then we will recap bowl games briefly after that. Mike, let's dive in. There have been some interesting developments, I think, across the ACC since we last talked, which was back, you know, a couple days before Christmas, I think. Some things have happened. The big one that stuck out to me was it was a few days after the national title game. I want to say it was a Friday, maybe, and it was like at like 2:00, it hit Twitter that Clemson was firing their offensive coordinator, Brandon Streeter, which was kind of unexpected because I think we said that was the first time that Dabo has fired a coach since firing Kevin Steele, his defensive coordinator, after the 70-33 Orange Bowl that, you know, led to hiring Brent Venables all those years ago. This is the first time that Clemson has fired an assistant coach since then. So a few days after the season's over, like coaching convention's over, all this, Dabo fires Brandon Streeter, and then within like 2 hours after that, it was, oh, they're going to hire Garrett Riley, offensive coordinator of the TCU Horned Frogs, you know, and little brother of Lincoln Riley, for what that's worth. This kind of came out of nowhere, but it seems like it was a well-executed move. And, Mike, I think this is a brilliant, brilliant move for Dabo Swinney. And I might need to go back and revisit a couple of my takes on him and where the Clemson program is after he's making a move like this.
No, you don't. You don't.
Okay.
You don't. So, because...
Sell me.
That the premise of you saying what you said was that Dabo was not going to make a change like this.
Right. Right. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That was kind of the caveat in all of it, was I didn't think he was going to make the change, and if not, it was going to be a problem. Now that he is making the change, I do think this changes the trajectory. This might well put Clemson back on, you know, a national title adjacent path that they had been on, you know, through most of the 2010s.
Right. No, agree. We just didn't think he would do this, right?
Right.
Like, the issues that we've talked about the last couple of years with Clemson is, you know, okay, hiring from within, no new ideas in the room. They're struggling, you know, playmaking at wide receiver, but is it really like, is it a recruiting problem or is it a player development problem? We've talked about all that stuff. We've talked about his lack of diving into a transfer portal, which he still really hasn't done, right? So we'll kind of see how that evolves now. But this is a big deal. Brandon Streeter was a part of the Clemson program for the better part of the last 15 years in some capacity. He's been there a long time, right? This is someone who has been with Dabo basically every step of the way, and he fires him. That's significant, right? And I thought it was interesting in the press release, too, that Dabo mentioned that Clemson's offense had improved this year, which I agree with. It had improved, but not to the level that it needed to for Dabo to feel good about retaining Brandon Streeter. So I agree with all that. I also have pointed out, and you've pointed out, that this offensive scheme kind of sucked with Streeter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was not exactly...
It was basically the same thing that Chad Morris installed back in 2011.
Yeah. Short passes, running the quarterback like heavy into the ground. And you know what? Like, I'm watching Clemson's bowl game. We'll talk about Clemson, Tennessee here in a bit. I'm watching Clemson's bowl game, and everybody is just like gushing over Cade Klubnik. And he kind of struggled in that game, and the offense kind of looked pretty much exactly the same as it had all year. And I'm like, man, it's not the quarterback. It's the scheme. And we've been telling people that. Bringing in Garrett Riley is significant. Like, it is significant because he has shown the ability to, at TCU, where they've recruited fine at TCU, but they haven't had the talent at TCU that Clemson's had. They haven't recruited to that level. And we saw what Garrett Riley did with that offense this year, national championship game notwithstanding. And I think this is a huge hire. This is a gigantic hire. And I'm with you. I think this definitely changes the trajectory kind of back to where we've, you know, come to expect Clemson to be under Dabo. And I think this was a move that Dabo had to make, right? And everybody likes to criticize Dabo Swinney, like, you know, he just like woke up on third base or something. That's not really what's happened, right? Like, Dabo built this program. He's not a dumb guy. Like, he definitely did some, you know, it was a period of introspection, I'm sure, following the season, like kind of looking at it and being like, you know, this offense is still kind of holding us back a little bit. And I was working on something for Sports Illustrated, and I was writing something about Trevor Lawrence being undefeated on Saturdays. And I was looking back at some of the scores from, it was a long post about like every game he's ever won on Saturdays. But I was looking at some of the scores of the Clemson games, even when like Trevor Lawrence was a freshman and not as, I mean, Lawrence was good, but he wasn't like the quarterback he was, like, as a sophomore, for example. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the stats. I'm looking at how many points Clemson was putting up, like, 55 points a game for, like, entire month of October that year.
Like, the floor with the entire ACC.
They were beating the hell out of everybody. They were beating everybody they played by, like, they beat Carolina by, like, 2. And then they beat, like, everybody else by 40. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the schedule, and I'm like, this Clemson offense has not been good for a while. And it really just kind of shows you how far they fell off. You know, we talked about War Machine Clemson. They haven't been War Machine Clemson in now, like, 3 years. And I think bringing Garrett Riley back into the fold, I think this is huge for Cade Klubnik. Like, that's my biggest takeaway. Huge for Klubnik. Because Max Duggan wasn't even the starter at TCU to start the year. Take it to the club level. Wasn't even the starter at TCU to start the year. He finished second in the Heisman.
Mm-hmm.
So this is huge for Clemson. I mean, it's a gigantic hire. Real smart by Dabo. He needed to do it, and I didn't think he would, but he pulled the trigger big time.
Agree. I don't know that it's a silver bullet necessarily. Like, this can't possibly fail, and it's going to, you know, for sure make everything better. But, like, it does seem like Cade Klubnik might end up being a little bit of an upgrade over what DJU was. Scheme-wise, like I said, I mean, this thing had gotten really stale. This thing was basically exactly what Chad Morris had installed 11, 12 years ago. I don't know that it had evolved, like, at all, and maybe had even, devolved a little bit, you know, through simplification or whatever. It's like, this thing was not really fooling anybody. They weren't scheming anybody open. It seemed like everybody knew what they were going to do. There were still some development issues, I think, you know, between wide receiver and offensive line, like we've talked about. But, man, I think upgrading to Garrett Riley at offensive coordinator, a guy who previously spent time, you know, he was only at TCU for 1 year, previously spent a couple of years at SMU, I believe with Sonny Dykes. So he's worked with him for a few years, and I think that's an upgrade. I think Cade Klubnik's an upgrade. This is a big deal for Clemson. I was honestly, I'll be real honest with you, and I'll just, you know, kind of pull back the curtain here a little bit. I was cooking up a take just so that, you know, during this little off time, I was cooking up a take that I thought that Florida State was going to win the ACC next year.
Uh-oh.
I might need to walk that back. I might need to walk that back a little bit depending on how this goes.
Right. Agree.
So, I think this is huge for Clemson. Like you said, I was not thinking that they were going to do this. I thought that Dabo was just kind of getting to the point of being, you know, I don't know. It's like your grandparents, like, you know, you want to try to teach, you know, the old dog new tricks, and it's like you just kind of can't. I felt like Dabo was getting a little bit into old dog, new trick territory, which I think lines up with the whole transfer portal thing and, like, basically everything else about the way that he runs the Clemson program. But, right. You know, credit to him, kudos. You know, I think this is a huge upgrade, a huge win for them. And, you know, we'll see how it fully pays off. You know, if they are obviously with the expanded playoff coming, I mean, they figure to be in the playoff mix more years than not, but especially now, I think this puts them in a position to modernize their offense and get back to that level of dominance within the conference.
Yeah. Yeah. 85-year-old Dabo traded his, like, 1992 Honda for a fucking Ferrari. Sorry. Grab that. This is a big time upgrade. Big time upgrade.
It is.
Sorry.
It is.
That just came out.
Well, you know. These things build up over the weeks that we don't record, so you got to let it out.
Yeah.
Credit to
for
Clemson.
The sponsors, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. They love that stuff. They love that stuff. Mike, we had some additional news, and I'm just going to, like, obviously the transfer portal has become a total focal point of the sport and the way that, you know, people build rosters. Obviously, that was a massive storyline with TCU and, you know, has continued to become so within the sport. We've had some transfer portal related news, and we'll really boil this down to, I think, three really interesting moves that we've had some resolution on over the past few weeks. We mentioned in the last show that Devin Leary from NC State, he was officially going to be transferring to Kentucky. Felt like that was a little bit of a, you know, interesting decision, interesting move. Good luck to him. That left a little bit of a void at NC State. We thought, you know, figured MJ Morris, you know, potentially even Ben Finley or whoever, you know, would be able to fill that role. Well, it turns out new offensive coordinator Robert Anai had a another ace up, you know, ace in the hole, another you know, card up his sleeve. They get the transfer of one Brennan Armstrong, coming from Charlottesville. Going to go reunite with Robert and I in Raleigh, I assume for just 1 year. I'll say this. I think Armstrong has 1 year of eligibility left, but, like, I'm starting to not think that eligibility is a real thing. Like, I think everybody's always eligible for one more year. So, you know, whatever. Just go do your thing. But, yeah, Brennan Armstrong headed to Raleigh to be the quarterback for NC State. I'm assuming he'll be the starter, not MJ Morris this year, but who, you know, maybe it's an open competition. I don't know. Going to be weird when NC State goes to Charlottesville this fall. I believe that's happening. So that'll be fun. And but all in all, I mean, that you figure with the way that that went at Virginia a couple of years ago, that's a huge win for NC State.
Yeah, who's playing quarterback UVA this year? Like Matt Johns? Something like that?
Oh, damn it. If we're going to play the Virginia quarterback name game, I'm losing badly here.
I mean, I named a really good one. Yeah. Not a good quarterback, just a good name. Let's be clear.
Yeah. There was another one. Kurt Benkert, that one.
Oh, nice.
I think it's Kurt Benkert.
Kurt Benkert. Yeah. Wow.
Grayson Lambert.
Okay. Gross.
Michael Rocco.
Oh, my God.
We're back to 2011 on CFBstats.com. Anyways, please continue.
Okay, yeah. Wow. We didn't name a good quarterback out of those four, did we?
Power ranking those guys. Anyways, that's a different show we'll do later.
Yeah. I mean, this is like a lateral move for NC State, isn't it?
I think it's an upgrade. I think Armstrong's more proven than anyone else that they had in their quarterback room.
No. I mean, relative to Devin Leary.
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean, different skill sets. Armstrong's more mobile than Devin Leary was. Leary probably a little bit more of a refined passer.
And Leary also, I mean, I know Leary had better stats this year, you know, before he got hurt than Armstrong. I know Armstrong's stat line this year was not very good, but I think you kind of put them both in, like, their perfect scenario, right? Their perfect state. Mm-hmm. I think I'm with you. It's a different skill set. I am wondering how different the offense is going to look now under an eye. Like, I think MJ Morris is a good fit for that NC State offense whenever he eventually takes over, if he stays there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, it's not – I mean, Brent Armstrong, you know, you're not transferring there to be the backup. So I do anticipate he'll be the starter. I think it'll be probably a pretty good thing for Dave Doran to, instead of going from, you know, a kid who basically played like three games in MJ Morris, you're going to, you know, a proven quarterback in Brennan Armstrong, and you're returning a pretty good team next year. I think that's probably playing into the equation a bit as well to mm-hmm. take on that transfer.
Yeah. I will say, I think something to keep an eye on is, as you mentioned, I mean, that NC State offense. So with Tim Beck leaving, with Robert and I coming in, I feel like that should look a little different schematically, what Anai is going to do versus what Beck was doing. And I think what I'm trying to say, I think, is that if it doesn't look all that different, I think that speaks a little bit to maybe some potential micromanagement from Dave Doran. Mm-hmm. That thing should look different under Anai than it did under Beck. And if it doesn't, it tells us something about the way that the program is being managed, I think. But I do think that familiarity, you know, between Anai and Armstrong, you know, I believe it was a couple of years that they were kind of the OC quarterback tandem in Charlottesville, that, I mean, those guys, the way that they know each other, they know what each other likes, they like to do, they're good at what they don't like to do. I just think that familiarity goes a long way. And I think it just puts NC State in a good position here moving forward, you know, especially first year under new offensive coordinator. I think that's a big deal. I'm with you though on you know, you can ask the question of, does MJ Morris stick around? He's a guy who was a pretty well regarded recruit, and as with, you know, the way that quarterbacks go these days, if he's not looking like he's going to be the starter, well, I guess it's time to transfer.
Right.
I have opinions on all that, but that's neither here nor there. But in any case, yeah, looks like Brandon Armstrong likely to be starting in Raleigh next year for the NC State Wolfpack.
Yeah, hold. Yeah, I'd say just hold on to those opinions. We don't want to get canceled by BetUS. Okay?
Well, you already took care of that with a certain four-letter F word here a few minutes ago, so yeah, that's
true. That's true. Yeah, Scott already took care of that. It's fine.
That's right. Thank you, Producer Scott.
What did I do? Okay.
You took care of it in post-production. This is one of these confusing timeline movie things of, you know, we'll figure it out later. Anyways. Mike, speaking of quarterbacks reuniting with their offensive coordinators, Boston College's Phil Dracovic, we got a transfer destination for him. He's heading to Pittsburgh to reunite with Frank Cignetti Jr. Thought that was an interesting move. He was a guy, the way that we talked about him, thought about him a couple of years ago, I thought he might go somewhere else, you know, somewhere a little bit more, I don't know, high profile. Sorry, Pitt fans, it's maybe not a nice thing to say, but... you know, he's a guy that I would have thought would be, you know, looking at one of those real like blue blood programs. And instead he's going to go likewise for the familiar face in Frank Cignetti Jr.
Could have played it at blue blood. Now he's playing at Pittsburgh.
They do have a really pretty shade of blue that goes in their uniform. So, I mean,
God, oh man.
I mean, that's good for Pitt. I think, I think they'll be able to protect him and, you know, work around him in offense a lot better than maybe what was going on in Chestnut Hill.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably a good move for Dracovic to get away from Jeff Hafley.
Might be. Man, we've had a very up and down, you know, roller coaster viewpoints on Jeff Hafley.
Like speaking of takes I've been cooking up.
Uh-oh.
I think Dracovic is the beneficiary of getting away from Boston College.
Interesting. I don't disagree. I think you're probably right.
Yeah, okay. I was like, wait, do you have a opposing viewpoint on that?
No, I don't. No, I think you're right.
Okay.
That's a really good move for Pittsburgh, too, by the way. I think that's a solid quarterback. I think that's an upgrade from Keaton Slovis for what that's worth.
Jesus, God. Yes, yes, absolutely.
If not, you've got bigger problems.
Yeah. I mean, he's not Kenny Pickett, but he's in kind of the same mold in terms of a little bit mobile, decent arm.
Just hope he can be Sun Bowl Nick Patty. We'll get there. But
Christ, again. My God.
This is what happens if we don't record in a few weeks.
Sun Bowl Nick Patty. It happens to be the best quarterback in the history of the conference.
Yeah, exactly.
It turns out
he's Michael Vick and you know, Phillip Rivers all in one, basically.
Like Vanilla Vick, as they were calling Brennan Armstrong in Charlottesville.
Well, at least he was left-handed, but
yeah, that was absurd.
Don't you put that name on him? That's my man, Danny Dimes, out there, Duke legend.
Danny Dimes. NFC divisional playoff participant, Danny Dimes.
Well, they're divisional round participants now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Speaking of things I can't believe.
Recovered this week, baby. Recovered.
Covered.
Seven covered. And a half.
Cover it.
I don't know what to say to that. Anyways.
We just talked about the Giants covering the spread against the Eagles.
Right. Yeah. I don't understand the NFC East as well as you do, I don't think.
Well, it ties into this conversation.
Duke, ACC,
right.
Mm-hmm. Here we are.
Yes,
right.
And we also talked about a game, White Mike. Also, we talked about a game that includes a team called the Eagles, and we're talking about a quarterback transferring away from the Eagles.
That is true. Okay, I see why we got down that ditch now. That makes sense.
Yes, that's why we're, yes.
Good for Pitt. Speaking of like who's playing quarterback for Boston College next year? What is going on
Dennis
there?
Dennis Grossell.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding. Is he still there?
A man named Dennis.
He's got to be retired now.
Is he still there? Was he the backup this year? Or was that last year? Who played for like half the year when Dracovic was out? Oh, it was Emmett Moorhead. A man named Emmett.
That's right.
I like how Boston College is going to have starting quarterbacks for 2 years named Phil, Emmett, and Dennis. It's quite the lineup.
Sounds like your local doctor's office.
That'll work. One more quarterback transfer, Mike, was Sam Hartman transferring from Wake Forest to Notre Dame. And I told you I had a potentially tragic take on that.
It was tragic. Please don't repeat it on this podcast.
Okay. All right. I'll save you. I'll spare you.
I think your exact words, actually, I don't want to say what your exact words were, because that would be misrepresenting a text from 3 weeks ago. But I think you said something along the lines of, are we sure Sam Hartman is even good? To which I responded with,
pretty much verbatim,
yes.
What I said.
I said, yes, Sam Hartman is good. We can talk about whether he's great. He is good.
I think what I meant by that, there was a couple things I kind of meant by that. Number one, like we've talked about how good that scheme for Dave Clawson is. You know, the play calling and the scheme and just the coaching there is excellent. And his receiving core has been really, really good to throw to for the last like 3 years. By the way, might be better than the receiving core that Notre Dame is running out there. So there's that. The other thing is that Sam Hartman also has had moments where like games just completely spiral out of control on him. I don't know how or why. Like he'll be really good for like 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row, and then he'll have a game that is just horrific. And you can't really see it coming. So I think that's a little bit of what I'm saying is I don't know that he, you know, I realize that he has been really good. He has won a lot of games. He's played a lot of football, like all that stuff. And is he one of the best quarterbacks in the ACC? Yeah, I think he was in the last couple of years. But is he, you know, like is he like a Heisman candidate? Is he going to fix Notre Dame's problems on offense? Like, I don't know if it's like that much of a for sure thing. I think there's still some flaws there that we'll have to see, you know, if they get remedied there in South Bend in his final year. What I assume is his final year, but once again, eligibility is not real.
You said, I have something I need to say here.
Okay.
You said that Sam Hartman, he does this thing where he has like 5 good games and 1 bad game.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad game, like a horrendous game. Like, horrible.
You know what we're going to call that? You know what we're calling that?
Pretty good.
It's the, yes, we're calling it the reverse Rozier, right? It's basically like where Malik Rozier had like 5 really bad games and then one like outstanding game and left us scratching our head. And then he went back to going like 5 for 20 for like 75 yards and 3 picks.
Shout out to Miami. That was a time. That was a moment in time.
The reverse Rozier.
Reverse Rozier.
Yes.
I like that.
I think Hartman will be good at Notre Dame. This is the best offensive line he's probably ever had.
Probably, yeah. Wake's offensive line wasn't bad.
Wasn't bad, but
Notre Dame will be better.
Right. Yeah, like Notre Dame's consistently pushing out pros, right?
First and second Wake's round draft picks, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, it's an upgrade there. I think point taken on the receiving core, because, like, Wake has had some dudes in the receiving room.
Mm-hmm.
Like best in the ACC or, like, top two in the ACC.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, receiving cores. So I do think it's probably going to be a step down at Notre Dame in terms of the receiving core, at least relative to what Notre Dame's been fielding the last couple of years outside. I think a big reason why Notre Dame struggled is a lot of the reason why Clemson struggled too. It's they don't have the dudes at wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, Notre Dame had Michael Mayer, and then when he doesn't play, it's like, what in the world is happening?
Yeah.
So hopefully Hartman has some receivers to throw to. Got Caleb Smith from Virginia Tech, who's a good receiver, but like you need like 5 stars on the outside. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, so, I mean when your best offensive weapon is a tight end, and that's like that's your best weapon by a comfortable margin. It's not the best sign for a program that is trying to get into the playoff and like compete for a national title. Like that isn't going to cut it.
Yeah, Notre Dame went from like having dudes like at running back and receiver. And not having the dudes in the trenches to now having dudes in the trenches and not having anything at running back and receiver.
Mm-hmm.
They went backwards.
Just totally flipped the entire script.
And they're basically back to square one. So they got to figure that out. But yeah. I think Hartman helps a quarterback. He's an upgrade from Drew Pine. I think he's an upgrade from Buckner. This is another quarterback room discussion, right? Where it's like MJ Morris and NC State, what does he do? What does Tyler Buckner do? Right? Because MJ Morris, highly touted recruit. Buckner was almost a 5-star, so mm-hmm. decent player, got hurt. Played in the bowl game, played well in the bowl game. you know, what does he do now? Because Hartman's not going to come in to play backup.
Right.
So do you stick around for another year and then not play till you're a redshirt junior or whatever he's going to end up being? I don't know. I don't know if that's how it works.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch. Because, yeah, I mean, they've got names in that quarterback room and how they manage it. I'm with you. I assume that Sam Hartman is the starter there. I mean, a lot of the college football world made it a pretty big deal about it when he announced he was transferring there. Like, I think everyone expects him to be the starter. So, yeah, what does everyone else do? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Anyways, Mike, that's the news that we wanted to cover. Obviously, as we said, I mean, there's a ton more transfers that have gone on out there. I could mention that Jeff Sims transferred to Nebraska and Haynes King transferred from Texas A&M to Georgia Tech. Like, I'll just briefly mention that. But, like, there's so much here within this conference that we could get into and mess with. But it is a lot to keep up with. We don't always have great analysis on every single one of these moves. And honestly, it's just a lot to try to keep up with. So maybe we'll get into that at some point later in the offseason, you know, looking at some of the transfers that have come in and out. But we will pass on that for now.
One last thing on Sam Hartman. Wake mm-hmm. Forest travels to South Bend on Notre Dame's Senior Day this year, November
8th. Ooh, baby. Ooh, baby.
I'm betting he walked on Wake's Senior Day too, huh?
Oh, my God.
That is awesome. Yeah, as mentioned, NC State plays at Virginia this year. And then I need to figure out, does Pitt host or does Pitt play Boston College yet? Let's see. Let's Google the schedule. This is good podcasting. 2023 Pitt schedule. They do get Boston College at Acrisure Stadium. All right, so Boston College is going to come in and see their old quarterback. At least they don't have to go to Chestnut Hill on that. So, anyways. Good times. Mike, you want to recap some bowl games?
Let's, we got to check the box.
Let's see what we can remember. Before we do that, real quick, let's remind the people about section103.com. It is the internet's premier place to buy all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. They have t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, something for men, women, children, something for the whole family. We are now past Christmas, so no Christmas gifts. But if you want Valentine's Day gifts, I know where to get them. It's at section103.com. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. Love all of my Section 103. I've been wearing it constantly over the last several weeks. I've got this performance Georgia Tech shirt on right now. They've got all the official word marks, things in the official Tech Gold, things with the official ATL logo. All those great things at section103.com. And once again, use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order of wonderful, high-quality, great-looking Georgia Tech apparel at section103.com. Mike, let's do these in the same order that we previewed them in chronological order, starting with the one that happened the furthest back. If you recall, the ACC's bowl season started on December 17th. It was the Wasabi Fenway Bowl, as the Louisville Cardinals defeated the Cincinnati Bearcats 24-7. This was a game we felt like was a bad spot for Louisville. It was an ultra-weird game, by the way, with Scott Satterfield having left Louisville. These two teams playing on a baseball field, sharing a sideline. There's just all sorts of weirdness here. I thought that Louisville was going to be, you know, less motivated to come out and play than Cincinnati. That was not true. Louisville came out, took it to Cincinnati a little bit. Absolutely just like ran it down their throats. I think they tried to throw it a little bit. It didn't really go great. Brock Duman threw an interception. That's all fine. But Maurice Turner goes 31 carries for 160 yards, and Jawar Jordan goes 9 carries for 115 yards and 2 scores. So huge day for Louisville on the ground. I was surprised that they were able to run the ball as well as they could against that Cincinnati defense. But again, questions now in my mind about Cincinnati's, you know, how much do they care about that game? And I don't know, just a weird game, but a good win for Louisville.
Cincinnati got bludgeoned up front.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both sides of the ball. It was big yikes.
Yeah.
It's not good. Yeah.
Yep.
They had a hard time. Louisville had 7 sacks in this game. So, mm-hmm. I mean, Cincinnati just could not throw the ball. Evan Prater was 7 of 15 for 83 yards and a touchdown pass. He was sacked 7 times, like I just mentioned. Running game. Non-sack adjusted, it was 74 yards rushing
mm-hmm.
on on 25 carries, so not very good.
Not great.
So, yeah, they had a really, really hard time.
Yeah.
It was bad. So
Cincinnati
ran the ball really well.
Cincinnati went 2 for 13 on third down. And just in general, like, I mean, they couldn't do a whole lot of anything on offense. Louisville's defense was pretty suffocating there for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Evan Prater had 7 carries that were not sacks. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they couldn't run. They couldn't run it. They couldn't throw it.
Yeah.
And then they literally couldn't stop the run on defense. So,
mm-hmm.
Cincinnati's actually pretty fortunate that this game wasn't a bigger blowout.
Yeah. Probably true. Louisville 24, Cincinnati 7. By the way, the one other thing I'll mention about this game, I don't know if you remember. I believe there was a segment at some point, it might have been in the second quarter or something, where the broadcast went to go talk to Scott Satterfield. And I feel like when they do these things, a lot of times with these bowl games, it's like, oh, we'll have the new head coach come up in the booth with us and talk to us. And they did this with Jeff Brohm. I think he might have just been on a phone somewhere. But Scott Satterfield looked like he was like in some secret lair, like closet, didn't want to be found anywhere. He was on video. It was kind of bizarre to watch, of like he was in like protective custody. So, yeah, just added extra weirdness to this game.
Yeah, I wish Satterfield had the balls to coach this football game.
I know. That would have made it so much better. Louisville 24, Cincinnati 7. We'll keep moving. I believe this was December 23rd, the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl. The Wake Forest Steamin' Deeks 27, Missouri 17. Good win for Wake Forest here.
Good win.
This was a good competitive game to watch, and Wake Forest just made the most of it in a few big moments. I don't remember like anything distinctly like one team was really better than the other. Just a good win by Wake Forest and a competitive game, competitive spot. Credit to them. And Sam Hartman played in this game, despite I think everyone kind of knew he wasn't coming back to Wake at this point. And but they go out and get one for the Gipper and knock off an SEC team.
And he played well too.
Mm-hmm.
280 yards and 3 touchdowns. He played well. A.T. Perry had a huge game, 116 yards receiving. Wake's defense had 4 sacks. This was a game that, you know, Wake went out and just won it.
It was pretty fun Missouri to watch, I thought.
It was competitive. Like, yeah, Missouri was in this game the entire way. Mm-hmm. Wake just kind of pulled away. You know, that fourth quarter touchdown was important. So, yeah, this was a good win for Wake Forest.
Yep. Credit to the Deeks. They finished 8-5. Pretty solid season, I thought. You know, probably could have been better, but if you're Wake Forest at this point, you're finishing 8-5, like, how are you going to complain about that?
Yeah, it could have been worse. I mean, I thought on paper they were probably a 9 or 10 win team. That's probably where they should have been.
Yep. Moving on to December 28th in the Military Bowl presented by Periton, the Duke Blue Devils 30, UCF 13. This is a spot we told you exactly how this was going to go. And boy, did it. Duke absolutely wanted to be there, took it to UCF. They were up 20-7 at halftime. UCF just did not look like they really wanted to be in this game. Duke was excited and really took it to them and won pretty convincingly, I think. There seemed like there was a different level of excitement on Duke's sideline throughout this game than what you were seeing from the Knights.
We tried to tell you. You know?
Yep.
We tried to tell you.
Yep.
I mean, UCF had 2 turnovers here, so that just kind of expedited things, made it a little bit quicker, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How to die a quicker death against a team that's well-coached like Duke. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's pretty simple. John Reese Plumlee is not a very good quarterback, mm-mm. And he can't really throw more than, like, I don't know, 10 or so yards down the field. And Duke's rushing defense is really, really good, and John Reese Plumlee likes to run the ball. He had 14 carries for 21 yards.
Yep.
So,
I mean, that's the story.
Yeah, I mean, UCF's best rusher, Isaiah Bowser, 11 carries, 39 yards. He did have 2 touchdowns. 11 mm-hmm. carries for 39 yards. He did not run the ball well in this game.
Yeah. I mean, UCF finishes with 128 yards on the ground. Sounds okay. It took him 36 carries to get there, so that was less than 4 yards a carry on the game. That's a good effort from the Duke defense. And then Duke, by the way, 40 carries for 177 yards. They ran the ball well here. Riley Leonard, both through the air and on the ground, was pretty electric for the Duke offense.
What he's done all season. Duke's going to be good next year, again, because Riley Leonard's coming back, and he's going to be good. So
Duke finishes 9-4. That's incredible to me. Absolutely incredible.
I thought they would win three games. So,
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to sniff a bowl game, much less finish with 9 wins. Pretty incredible. You know, I understand why Sonny Dykes won Coach of the Year at a national level. Mm-hmm. But boy, Mike Elko damn sure deserved to be a finalist for that. And, I mean, just go ahead and write it in pen in the ACC. He won the ACC's Coach of the Year, and there was not a second guess of who was going to get that award, I don't think.
No. I mean, this team on paper had no business finishing with 9 wins, including a bowl game victory. So.
Yeah, not at all. Duke 30, UCF 13. And then later that night, the number 15 Oregon Ducks 28, the North Carolina Tar Heels 27. Mike, this game was nuts.
It was insane.
It was very back and forth. UNC seems to have remembered how to score in the red zone. They did struggle a little bit in the second half to punch it in. They ended up kicking a couple of field goals. Oregon scores a touchdown with 19 seconds left in the game to win. A total heartbreaking situation. UNC had this game won if they could have gotten one more stop, but they could not. So I credit to UNC for a hell of an effort here. I really did not think this was going to go very well. I really thought that Oregon would be able to cover like a 2-touchdown spread, you know, or certainly it would be something like that. But, I mean, UNC had it won until the final minute of the game, basically. So that was I was impressed, and, you know, it's a bummer for UNC that they had to go down that way.
I mean, I lost some money here. I bet Oregon spread, which I dumb. Just dumb decision. I lost some money on bowl games. I don't bet the bowl games.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-mm.
You just want to squeeze the last bit of the juice out of college football season. Then you just don't have any money left after that, you know?
Yep.
Just tough scene out here. this game was nuts. This game was nuts. And you know what? Never bet. Here's the thing, though. Like, if it was on the money line, you just bet Oregon, never in doubt, because you knew Bo Nix, like, 3 days after announcing he was coming back to school, was playing in this bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
You knew he was going to have the juice, baby. Mm-hmm. You knew it. You just knew.
Yep. And sure enough, he did. Sure,
he actually didn't play that great. He actually didn't play that great. And then, like, the final drive of the game, he marches him right up the field and does Bo Nix things. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
That's good.
No, that was – they won that game. When he was a true freshman at Auburn, that was kind of how they won that game against Oregon to start the year, was, like, basically doing nothing all the game, you know, the whole game, and then, you know, pulls a miracle out of his hat in the final minute for a touchdown pass to win the game. It was just – yeah, that's Bo Nix things for you.
Yeah, so – he was in true Bo Nix form. I will be placing a small wager. I enjoy losing money, so I'm going to be placing a small wager on him to win the Heisman next year.
I hope you do enjoy losing that money.
Yeah, it just, you know, could have been a finalist this year.
Could have, yeah. This was absolutely a really, really great quarterback matchup, by the way, between Bo Nix and Drake May. Easily could be two Heisman finalists next year, so
yeah,
something to keep an eye on. Oregon 28, North Carolina 27. Moving on to the 29th, we started with the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl as Minnesota won 28-20 over our Syracuse Orange. My
lost money on this game as well, betting Minnesota -10.5.
Yeah, we felt really good about Minnesota in this game. Felt like, you know, they were going to run away with this. That Syracuse was overmatched. Mike, Syracuse outplayed Minnesota pretty comfortably in this game. It's honestly shocking that they lost it, and it sucks for that team and those fans. They did not deserve to lose this game at all. They outgained Minnesota 477-215. It's just there were just a couple of moments that Syracuse had a couple of pretty critical errors, and Minnesota was able to take advantage, and that was all that they needed to win the game on the scoreboard.
for example, in the third quarter when it was 14-10, and Garrett Schrader threw the worst interception in the history of the sport.
It was real bad.
Oh, it was so bad. And it was like the third or fourth consecutive time they ran that same play. And the DB's like, wait a second. Coleman Bryson, yeah.
Maybe I should try to jump this.
I'm going to, yeah. You've run this now three straight plays. Let me just jump this route. And then Schrader like tried to pull the ball back. You know, he like let it go, but he tried to pull the ball back.
No,
he saw
no, no.
Yeah. And then he fell on his face trying to make the tackle. Not good.
I think I think I like blurted something out before the defender even caught the ball. I was like, oh no. Like you could just see what was about to happen. And yeah, that
Scott,
was
Scott. Scott sent the text message and said, oh my God, did you see that throw? Yep. It was awful.
So so that happens. So he throws a pick six. Syracuse gets the ball back. They go 13 plays, 53 yards, and they end up kicking a 38-yard field goal from about the Minnesota 20-yard line. So that makes it 21-13. On the ensuing kickoff, Minnesota runs it back 72 yards to the 25-yard line, and they have a two-play 25-yard touchdown drive at that point to make it 28-13. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, Minnesota struggled to move the ball for a lot of this game, like had a lot of problems. Really only had two good offensive drives, but still got two cheap touchdowns basically by pick six and long kickoff return. So yeah, that's kind of what made the difference here on the scoreboard.
Syracuse could have won this bowl game.
They really could have. Credit to that coaching staff for having them like ready to play and moving the ball. And I felt like in a lot of ways kind of out-coaching Minnesota.
PJ Fleck, he does the reverse Rozier thing. Where it's like five good games and one head scratcher.
Yep, he sure does. He sure does. Minnesota 28, Syracuse 20. That night, it was the Cheez-It Bowl where the number 13 Florida State Seminoles 35, the Oklahoma Sooners 32. Speaking of games we thought might be blowouts and then turned into absolute bangers of games. My goodness, this game was wild, back and forth, lots of fun. I hope you got a chance to watch this game.
Yeah, this game was sick. there was a while there I wasn't sure Florida State was going to win the football game, like for most of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like it took about a full three quarters for me to come back around to think, yeah, maybe they'll win this game. It did not feel like they were going to win.
No, it really didn't. I'll tell you what, though, man. Jordan Travis balled out.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good.
27 really for 38 good. For 418, two touchdowns, one pick through the air, another seven carries for 50 yards on the ground. Yeah, he carried that offense for a lot of this game.
He had a couple passes to Johnny Wilson, as he tends to. Mm-hmm. Johnny Wilson, if you want to talk about like player of the bowl season for the ACC, Johnny Wilson going 8 for 202.
Mm-hmm.
He caught a couple of bombs.
Yes,
he did. A couple of bombs in this football game.
I think he almost had a couple more that I think got knocked away kind of at the last second or something, you know. But he was huge for that Florida State offense.
Yeah. Florida State really, really struggled to stop the run in this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why Oklahoma hung around. It was just, you know, a few explosive plays in the running game. Dylan Gabriel, I thought, played fine. I was surprised they let Oklahoma hang around.
Yeah.
They did.
Agreed.
I mean, Oklahoma led for a lot of this game.
Mm-hmm.
So,
for Florida State to finish this game with 6 sacks and 11 tackles for loss, they did. It really kind of felt like it was like they were either hitting Oklahoma in the backfield or Oklahoma was ripping off 10, 12 yards of play. Like it was.
Yeah.
There was not a whole lot of in between, it felt like.
Yeah, there were a lot of fireworks in this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this was really fun. Honestly, well, I think there's one more we got to talk about that might have it beat. But otherwise, this is probably the game of bowl season for the ACC.
Yeah, I agree.
Very, very fun one. So good time. Florida State 35, Oklahoma 32. Three more here for December the 30th. We will start with the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Maryland 16,
Bruh.
The number 23 NC State Wolfpack 12 Bruh. In a game that really kind of felt like it set college football back a few years. This was, you know, there's one thing, like, defensive football can be fun to watch. This was not defensive football. This was just kind of bad football, Mike. This was rough.
This was horrible. This was horrible. This was, you know, you talk about one of the best games of bowl season for the ACC. This was one of the worst games of bowl season, period.
Yeah.
This was horrible.
This was horrible, not a fun watch.
Everybody was getting fired up because it's the Duke's Mayo Bowl, and the coach gets Mayo dumped on him. This was objectively a terrible football game. Horrible to watch. I couldn't really watch this. It was terrible. Ben Finley was bad.
He had a hard time in this game. So did Talia. Talia finishes. He was one incomplete pass short of 50% passing on the day. 19 of 37. Throws a couple of picks. Finley threw a couple of picks. I think those were the main, those were the turnovers in the game. But, yeah, I mean, both of these offenses really had a bad time trying to do anything. And I think I will give credit to the NC State defense. I thought they did some, they played their tails off and really did everything they could to keep NC State in this game and give them a chance to win. But, man, there was some serious offensive incompetence on both sides of the, both sidelines, really.
I mean, NC State's longest run was 5 yards.
Oh, geez.
They had four different people carry the ball, 18 carries for 27 yards.
Should we just like quickly, just quickly, real quick, just for the people, hit the drive chart here?
Oh, God, if we must. Scott, you got Yakety Sacks queued up. Thank you.
Full game drive chart. Here we go. Maryland starts with the ball in the first half. It goes turnover on downs, interception, interception, field goal, field goal, punt, turnover on downs, touchdown, field goal, punt, 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 field goal, end of half. At that point, it's 10-9 Maryland. Reminder, final score 16-12. So second half, NC State starts with the ball and goes punt, field goal, punt, 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 interception, field goal, punt, punt, interception, end of game. Yikes. And even more fun story, I watched most of this.
Why, you sick bastard. I had this game on in the background. I was actually working, I believe. And I had this game on in the background.
I think there was something else that was on, but it wasn't like the ACC game. So I was like, oh, I might as well just, you know, watch this for research purposes. But, man, I don't get paid enough for this research job.
Maryland did not sack NC State in this game, and NC State still only ran for 27 yards.
Yeah.
No sacks.
Yeah, not great. Not great.
Don't got it. You don't got to adjust those rushing stats.
This was a let's just get this over with and get the hell out of here kind of game. So maybe we do the same.
Yeah, I think we should.
Maryland 16, NC State 12. A couple more. The other candidate for a game of the bowl season for the ACC, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. The Pitt Panthers 37, the number 18 UCLA Bruins 35. What a game. UCLA had this thing in the bag. Pitt looked like they were kind of dead in the water there midway through the third quarter. And then Pitt rips off they had 14. They ripped off 20 points in a row, two touchdowns and two field goals, take a 34-28 lead. UCLA scores a touchdown to take a 35-34 lead with 34 seconds left. Pitt goes 6 plays, 46 yards, and gets a field goal with 4 seconds left to win this game. What a huge comeback for Pitt. And then just a lot of late game drama here. There was some serious back and forth, some shenanigans. There was a pick six in here somewhere. I think Dorian Thompson-Robinson threw like 3 interceptions. That was kind of a mess. Ethan Garbers threw another one for UCLA. This thing was wild. There was a lot going on here. And, what a win for Pittsburgh and for the ACC.
Oh, God. Is he related to Chase Garbers?
Uh-oh.
Are there more of them? Are there more interception machines?
There might be.
Oh, God.
Let's find out. Keep going.
I bet he is. I mean, that's a very uncommon name. We joked earlier that Sun Bowl Nick Patty might be the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
He completed 20 of his 41 passes.
Almost 50%.
Almost 50%, which is good for Nick Patty.
Sure, yeah.
You know, to be fair. One touchdown, one interception. He also had 72 yards rushing. So almost 300 all-purpose yards for Peppermint Nick.
UCLA turned the ball over 5 times in this game. Man.
They turned it over 5 times and still almost won.
Mm-hmm.
Can I share my experience of the Sun Bowl?
Yeah.
Watching? Yes.
Okay, so I think this is relevant maybe to paint the picture of what these Pitt fans were like. So I was out with a friend for lunch. We're out at the local establishment. No big deal. We get there around noon. Again, it's like that weird week in between New Year's. No one's really there. People start coming in about like mid-afternoon time. We were there for a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clearly it is a South Carolina bar. Like there's tons of South Carolina people because they were playing Notre Dame at the same time. It was very clearly a South Carolina bar, yet the Sun Bowl was on prior to that bowl game starting, right? And there was a Pitt fan, a grown man with a very authentic Kenny Pickett jersey who was very adamant that the channel not be changed for the Sun Bowl. And I was just drinking my beer, trying to keep it to myself, but I just was laughing very, very hard.
You didn't go ask to get a picture with him?
I did not, and then when they kicked that field goal to win or whatever happened, he was the loudest person in that bar of about 300 South Carolina fans, and it was hilarious.
Hell yeah.
Hail to Pitt, baby. Pitt finishes 9-4, by the way.
Good year.
You know, I'm coming to terms with the fact that, like, we can think what we think about Pat Narduzzi and, like, you know,
I know,
and all this stuff.
I don't want to have this conversation.
I'll just say this. At the end of the day, like, damn. Like, this is another good year. And at some point, like, what can I say? What can I say?
He just finds a way all the time. Mm-hmm. He just finds a way. Yeah. He's good.
That is a legit solid team and a legit solid program that he's put together.
Every year.
Yep.
Every year.
Absolutely.
It's unfortunate. Really.
This is where we might insert that that Jesse Pinkman, he can't keep getting away with it meme.
Yeah.
Well, he does. He does. Maybe he's a good coach.
I knew you were going there, too, and I just didn't want to go there. But we had to.
We did. Pitt 37, UCLA 35. Last one, this one was, largely a snoozer here, Mike. The Capital One Orange Bowl, number 6, Tennessee, 31, number 7, Clemson, 14. Not a snoozer as much because, like, well, Clemson lost, but just, like, I felt like it was pretty apparent in the first half. Like, Clemson did not have it in this game, at least on offense. Like, they were not moving the ball well at all. I will say this. They were moving the ball, but they... To borrow a term that I believe Ari Wasserman really likes to use, Clemson was absolutely playing some grab ass in the first half, trying to finish drives. Their first four drives, the first one, they called it a turnover on downs. They tried to fake a field goal where they ran like an option thing with Dabo's son, and he probably should have pitched the ball. It probably would have been there if he had done it, but he didn't. He held it, and they lost yardage on the fourth down.
Yeah.
So there was that. And then BT Potter misses 3 field goals, one from 55, one from 49, and one from 42. A guy who has been...
BT Nodder, yeah.
Exactly. Hardly know her. But, a guy who has been incredibly reliable... And misses 3 straight field goals on 3 straight drives. You start wondering, like, why do you send him back out there? Well, they did send him back out there, and he hit a 31-yard field goal on the next drive. So, but, finishing drives with field goals and such with the way that Tennessee's offense is going, probably not going to win you the game. And they really did not have a chance to win this game in a lot of ways. So, I don't know. I thought Cade Klubnik played hard, but was clearly not, like, a one-man solution to what has ailed Clemson's offense. Yeah, this just never really felt like a game that Clemson was going to come back and win, and they end up losing by 17.
I'm looking forward to the Joe Milton experience of Tennessee next year.
It seems like they might have got him a little bit dialed in. You know, he was a little less wildly inaccurate than we have seen him in the past.
If
they can keep that thing under control for a lot of next season, yeah. There is some damage that can be done with him at quarterback.
Yeah, Yeah, he's got quite the fastball.
Yes, he does.
He will. Yeah, he'll throw it through you on a little angle route out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. He'll put it on you.
Yeah. Yeah,
he, slant route.
He does not have a changeup. He does not have a breaking ball. He has about 103-mile-an-hour fastball, and it is coming at you every time. Screen pass?
I was going to say.
Fastball. Like,
I was going to say, it's yeah, his touch pass is a slower fastball. He, he chucks that thing around, buddy.
Yes. Yes, he does. It's wild to watch, honestly. Yeah, I think I turned this game off at halftime, honestly. I was like, I've seen enough from Clemson. Like, this is not an easy watch. It's not going well. They turned it over a couple times. Tennessee did look a little bit more fired up to be there than Clemson did. And so there was that as well. I'll throw that out there. But
which I was a little surprised about, given how Tennessee's season kind of went down the drain in November.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm surprised that they got back up and, you know, they were fired up with the way that things were trending, and then, you know, you lose to South Carolina, and then, you know, things don't end up the where you thought they might, and you know, but anyways, Tennessee 31, Clemson 14.
High pull, damn good hire, man.
Yeah, that's working out way better than I thought it would, honestly.
We were all, yeah, I mean, everybody made fun of it because he was Danny White's boy. Mm-hmm. But this is working out. This is the best coach Tennessee's had since Fulmer.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It's hilarious.
Yep. Yep. Mike, the ACC finishes, I believe it was 6-4 in bowl games. 6-3, actually. He had 5. How many was it? Pitt, Florida State, Duke, Wake, and Louisville. Okay, so we had 5 wins, 4 losses. 5-4 in bowl games. Honestly, better than I thought they would do. And an improvement on prior years. So that's good on the ACC.
I mean, you and I were trying really hard during the previews, like, not to make fun of the ACC teams and all these matchups. Yeah. So it went way better than we expected.
Yes. Yeah, definitely an improvement on, you know, what I was expecting and what we've seen in recent years. So credit to the conference for getting it done this year. Obviously, a lot of context that can be thrown in, and at some point, who really cares? But, you know, it's kind of nice going through bowl season and seeing some wins from our teams. So good stuff.
Yep.
Mike, that's all I got. Anything else that we need to talk about before we resume parenting duties?
When are we recording next?
I don't know. Depends on when stuff happens. We had talked about doing something probably around signing day in February. I think I still owe the people a final grade on the Brent Key hire. So maybe we get together, talk signing day, talk about Brent Key and that staff a little bit, and hit on any other news that is very likely to come up here in the next few days. But yeah, maybe we aim for sometime in early February.
Okay.
Does that work?
That works.
Great. I'll see you there.
Okay.
All right, let's work on getting out of here. In the meantime, y'all can come find us on Twitter. I am at FTRSJoey. He is at Mike McDaniel SI. Together we're at BC Podcast ACC. By the way, you can find us on YouTube, where we officially reached 100 subscribers. Thank you all so much for your support and getting us there. That was something that we really tried to achieve throughout the year, and we could not have done it without you, our loyal listeners. So we really appreciate all of your support for that.
Yes.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are
push. We got it.
Yes, we did. We are still, for the moment, youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast, but we will be, we'll resolve that here soon. Maybe by the time we get to the next episodes, we'll have an actual formal permanent URL for you that you can go watch us on YouTube if you so choose.
Yes.
We are on iTunes. We're on Spotify. If you just prefer the audio format, we're on Amazon Music, all those good places. Go find us there. Hit that subscribe button. Tell your friends. We appreciate those who do. We are, where else are we on the social medias, Mike? I haven't done this in a while. I'm a little rusty. Where are we on the social medias?
Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference/ratereview. Find some of our podcasts there. Instagram as well, at BC Podcast ACC.
Yeah. Do that. Do it for the gram. Mike, you can also send us emails. We have an email address still. It's the longest email address known to man. It is basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, nailed it.
And now that it is the off season, we are definitely looking for content ideas and anything. If y'all send us emails, we will answer them this time.
We should do team recaps.
We should. We do need to do that if whenever we have time.
Okay, perfect. There's some content.
Yes, there is. Yeah, there's some stuff we got to get into. One of the first ones likely involves bringing our buddy Cam on because
he's asked.
Yeah, there is some stuff that we should dive into with him. That'd be fun.
Yes.
We should do that.
Yes.
Mike, that's all I got. Anything else?
No, I think we're good.
You want to come back and talk more ACC football stuff here in the offseason as we continue to record and provide the people with content?
Yeah, somehow we're in the offseason again. This keeps happening.
Yeah, that went quick. It goes quick.
The world turns.
That's right. Time flies when you're having fun and not sleeping.
Dying a little bit more every day.
That's right. That's right. All right. Mike, have a good couple of weeks here, and we'll talk again soon.
Yes.
All right.
Sounds good. Oh, that sounds like your kid.
Sure does. I got to run.
See you later.
See you guys. All right. For that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, and for producer Scott, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon. And until next time, go ACC.